the candidate for governor share a stage? What did voters learn? Evan Bayh campaigns for Joe Donnelly. Will he attract Lugar Republicans? The Indiana controversy over rape and abortion. Michelle Obama visits and lawmakers call DCS on the carpet. That plus Carmel wins a national honor and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 24, 2012.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, the three candidates for governor took part in a first-of-its-kind forum. It took place at IUPUI with former Chief Justice Randy Shepard posing the questions. One of them had to do with the state's $2 billion surplus. Should the state keep it or give some of it back to taxpayers?
We've proposed an across-the-board cut in Indiana's income tax of 10%.
I do not see any need for any tax increases. I see great potential in cutting a few different taxes out there.
I think the key to our economic development, though, is not necessarily to rush and give all that away and give it back. We have to ascertain the actual dollar amount. I think the second thing we need to do is make sure that we have a very, very fair, broad-based tax policy.
Was the candidate forum enlightening? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Murray Clark. Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. And Delaney, are they all sending a similar message?
No, I don't think that's a similar message. I think the message you heard from Mike Pence is the same message you've been hearing from Republicans since the 1980s, and that is cut the taxes on the wealthy. When you have a non-graduated income tax and you cut that tax across the board, you're going to give the primary benefit of those cuts to the wealthy, just like they've been doing. That's why you have 85% of the wealth of this country concentrated in the top 20% of the people, and that's been going on since the 1980s. Even Mitch Daniels, when he started his administration and talked about tax reform, talked about graduating that income tax.
He also talked about a higher income tax rate on people who made more than
$100,000. Well, that would be a graduation.
Right.
But this is the same kind of trickle-down economics that we've heard from the Republicans for decades, and I think that's pretty enlightening.
This is unusual. The School of Public and Environmental Affairs put this on, and they're trying to make use of their new affiliation with Randy Shepard. Do you think voters paid attention to any great degree?
Well, first of all, kudos to them, and they had Randy Shepard moderating it, which was great. He has such great gravitas. I wonder if the public's paying attention this early, and I hope they have more, and they're going to repeat the show. I mean, I thought Mike Pence looked great. I think looked gubernatorial, and he talked about issues, he talked about ideas, he was substantive, and John Gregg is still introducing himself to the public. He talked more about himself, I think, than ideas.
This was all about issues, because that's their thing, but it wasn't really about necessarily the issues of the day, the issues that the candidates are raising in their TV ads. It was about big picture issues.
It was about big picture issues, and this kind of forum lent itself to those kinds of issues because it could be more of a discussion than in a typical debate where the candidates sort of rush in with their 30-second or 60-second soundbite that you do already hear on TV. So I sort of like these kinds of forums because there is a better chance to explore an issue more thoroughly.
So let's talk about what's on TV and what else is going on in the race. John Gregg came out with his second ad this week. He's at the Clip and Curl in Sanborn and talking about social issues that Mike Pence has been involved in and saying that people don't want to hear it. First of all, it's a very unusual ad.
It is a very unusual ad, but I think it's a very good ad. And the reason I think it's a good ad is because he does take on some of those very hard-hitting issues, slips them in with a good right punch, if you will. But at the end, you're kind of smiling. You think, gosh, that was kind of interesting, and a little bit of humor. And I think that differentiates him in a field that's crowded not just at the gubernatorial level, but all levels, with these rancorous ads that just turn people off. So this one's got a chance for attention. John Gregg's problem is he doesn't have enough money to make that ad stick. If he does, then he might have an in.
Well, you get some John Gregg personality wrapped around a political attack.
Right. Well, a political attack that's justified, because there is not a one-wits difference between Mike Pence, Richard Murdoch, and Todd Akin from Missouri on these issues. In fact, Akin voted with Mike Pence, and Mike Pence voted with Akin 94% of the time when they were in Congress together. Okay? So he believed the same as Akin does about a woman's right to choose, and I think that's something that you're not going to hear out of Mike Pence's mouth this year. He keeps he's the wolf in sheep's clothing. He doesn't want to talk about these issues because they're so divisive.
Well, the Gregg campaign's been trying very hard to tie Todd Akin to Mike Pence.
94% is a pretty good tie.
But Todd Akin fell out of favor here, not because of his position on abortion. It was because of the ridiculous statement he made saying that women don't become pregnant from legitimate rape.
If they will it. But that same doctor who he relied on for that quasi-science was honored at an event in Vandenberg County when Mike Pence was the keynote speaker.
In the meantime, Pence has been trying to talk about nothing but jobs, but yesterday in a session with reporters, he said that if he's elected governor and if the General Assembly passes pro-life legislation, he will sign it. That struck me as odd, that you would promise to sign something without anything other than a broad subject category.
Well, I mean, Mike Pence made no secrets that he's pro-life. I mean, and to compare him to Akin is crazy. Akin's
authored a bill together.
Well, so did
to restrict the definition of rape. The same thing we're talking about.
Well, first of all, that bill was not about restricting rape. It was about defunding public taxpayer funding of abortion, which is.
There was an element of that bill that redefined rape, and Mike Pence voted for the amendment that took that portion out.
And he also sponsored it 4 years earlier.
Well, Joe Donnelly sponsored it too. I mean, Donnelly was for
the definition of rape.
He sponsored the bill that included that. He was one of 227 co-sponsors. Yeah. Along with Mike Pence.
The problem they have with the wording on this is that there is not a difference between them at all. And if there was a difference between them, you would hear Mike Pence getting up and saying, I would be willing to tolerate abortions in the case of rape and incest. And you don't hear that, do you?
I just want to go back to your question, which is about whether it's a good idea for a candidate to be making a broad statement like, I'm going to sign legislation that he hasn't seen yet. I think Mike Pence is a more thoughtful guy than that, and so that's a little bit disappointing. And I think what he'll find when he starts getting pieces of legislation, you have to be a little more discerning than that.
I'm in agreement. More on the Akin matter in just a little bit. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. Last week's question was, which candidate will be best at creating new jobs? 42% said Mike Pence, 12% said John Gregg, 41% said Rupert Boneham. We woke up the libertarians. 5% said none of the above. This week's question is, should Indiana abortion law include an exception for rape and incest? Your choices are A, yes, and B, no. If you want to take part, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Joe Donnelly wants to win support from Republicans, and he thinks Evan Bayh can help him do it. Evan Bayh joined Joe Donnelly for a two-day, five-city campaign swing that started here in Lawrence.
He's honest, he's hardworking, he's all those things we would want in a public servant.
The two Democrats toured Monarch beverage facilities to talk about small business principles and, most importantly, bipartisanship.
Senator Bayh epitomizes, and Senator Lugar has epitomized, both of them have, the tradition we have as senators here in Indiana, which is you try to do the right thing. You don't worry about politics.
It's a backhanded way of reminding voters that Republican Richard Murdoch won the GOP primary over Dick Lugar by suggesting that he won't compromise.
The two United States senators who were from the same state but from different parties, who had the voting record most alike,
or Dick Lugar and myself.
The Murdoch campaign, meantime, thinks the images of Bai and Donnelly together are good for the Republicans.
Because it reminds voters that these gentlemen in Congress voted for the bailouts of Wall Street, for Obamacare.
Murray Clark, is Evan Bai still a hot property in Indiana politics?
Well, I think with the passage of every day, he's not. I think Bros is right, by the way. I mean, as best I can tell, Evan Bai didn't run again because he thought he was going to have a tough time defending the votes that Bros talked about. Joe Donnelly's voting record is just like that. If Evan had a tough time defending it, Joe will. And then the other thing I will say is the Republicans are getting behind Richard Murdoch. I mean, Lugar has endorsed him. He introduced him to the Republican caucus.
He did, in private. We still haven't seen the public endorsement from Dick Lugar that Richard Murdoch would like.
I mean, Lugar's 44 years elected official.
Yeah, he's not standing behind Murdoch.
What's interesting about this is that they are so far removed from mainstream Hoosier politics that they don't realize that both Evan Bai and Richard Lugar have followings in the state of Indiana, and people like them. And the same thing, Richard Lugar's not campaigning for him, neither is Mitch Daniels. It's interesting that he accepted
because he took himself out of politics.
Yes, he did. Isn't that funny? Right before the campaign. Just imagine how that happened.
It didn't happen to that job at Purdue.
The problem they have is trying to sell somebody who is so far to the right. He's campaigning, asking for your vote to run for the U.S. Senate, and then at the same time saying, but if I'm there, I want a constitutional amendment to make sure you can't vote me home the next time around because you don't deserve to have the direct election of senators anymore.
Mitch Daniels stood shoulder to shoulder with Richard Murdoch the day after the election.
He worked with him as treasurer.
Richard Murdoch was on the Daniels motorcycle ride a couple weeks ago.
Oh, wow. On the same motorcycle with the governor?
Not others.
Yeah.
A lot going on in this race this week. You got the Senate majority pack coming in for Donnelly with a big buy, and then you got Americans for Prosperity coming in for Murdoch, and Murdoch coming out with an attack ad. The attack ads from the Republican side, both the campaign and the outside money, are all about ties to Obama.
Well, they believe that that's an issue that is kryptonite here for Joe Donnelly, and we're certainly going to find out because that's what it's going to be all about. You know, who ties who to whom? And really, I think that the smart play is to go for those so-called Lugar Republicans because I think they represent a lot of people in Indiana in the middle. And if the negative campaigns don't turn those voters completely off of politics and they decide to go into the voting booth, then they'll make the difference in who wins this election. It'll be curious to see who takes the gloves off long enough and tries to bring those people in rather than pushing them out.
Yeah, this is definitely the most interesting race in Indiana this year because we have a lot of open questions. I don't really know how popular Evan Bai remains. Your sort of conventional wisdom is that he's very popular, but he has been out of the loop for a while. I mean, I'm not sure people are talking about him. You know, we don't know what those Dick Lugar Republicans and independents are going to do. I mean, a conventional wisdom would say they would come back to the Republican Party eventually, but we don't really know.
That's the problem, is that the negative campaigns have a tendency to drive people out. That's why we see voting rates at 40% or less.
Well, that and the Republican attempt to disenfranchise voters by taking hours and taking remote sites away and requiring identification you need for anything else, which is, of course, part of their agenda for 2012.
What?
Oh, what? Did you hear your Pennsylvania lead Republican in the state legislature say they passed theirs so that Romney would carry Pennsylvania? Did you hear that?
I didn't hear
that. What about the guy in Ohio?
All right, we're going to move on.
Restricting in Democratic counties but not in Republican counties.
As promised, Missouri Congressman Todd Akin is under fire for suggesting that women cannot get pregnant if they are victims of, quote, legitimate rape.
The Akin controversy has prompted comparisons in the New York Daily News and by CNN to the comments made by Indiana Republican Eric Turner. They came in this 2011 debate over amendments on an abortion bill when Turner suggested that abortions for rape or incest victims amounted to a loophole.
Someone who is desirous of an abortion could simply say that they've been raped. Or there's incest.
I was a sex crimes investigator.
At the time, it prompted an emotional response from Linda Lawson, a former detective who is now the House Democratic leader. She talked about interviewing rape victims.
They don't make it up. Then they have to go to court. They have to stand in a courtroom, and they have to face the person who did it to them.
Now Lawson says that what Aiken said absolutely reminds her of what Turner said. Aiken apologizes in a new campaign ad.
Rape is an evil act. I used the wrong words in the wrong way, and for that I apologize.
And Turner apologized on the House floor a day after his remarks, as seen here in video provided by House Republicans.
I wish I would have chosen my words better yesterday as I was speaking during some of the amendments.
John Katzenberger, are there legitimate parallels between what Turner said and what Aiken said?
Well, if they reflect a fundamental belief by these people and others like them about this, then, yeah, maybe there is. But I think it's important to note that certainly Representative Turner wasted no time making a very public apology about that and acknowledging that he felt like what he said was wrong. And so, I think that people need to be very careful because you don't want to do something like this. It's wrong, and it's wrong-headed.
Well, both Turner and Aiken apologized, but neither of them said that they'd change their position.
Well, to me, these are different situations. I mean, they're the same in one aspect of talking about reporting rape and whether the legitimate reports are not of rape. But they're different in that Turner wasn't going on to talk about how women get pregnant or don't get pregnant during a rape. So to me, there's two distinct things here.
But he was suggesting that there's a loophole in the abortion law that should be closed for victims of rape,
which is the same suggestion
that Aiken was making.
He does believe, Turner does believe, obviously, that women, there should not be an exception. Right. But I still think there's a difference in what they were saying.
People noticed.
Oh, about Aiken? Yeah.
And about Turner.
I mean, I know Eric Turner. Eric Turner's a good man. I don't know this guy Aiken. I wish he'd go away. We talked about this before. The discussion about trying to compare this to Mike Pence or whatever, and using that federal bill, I think is wrong. I think that bill had widespread support at 227 sponsors and so forth.
There's not a whit's worth of difference here. What you've got is a position that's indefensible, and that is that anybody who's raped or anybody who's a victim of incest really, has to carry the child to term, doesn't matter. That's what the underlying premise is here. And then they have this pseudoscience they've made up to try to excuse it because it's an indefensible position.
Well, Aiken does.
Aiken does, but that same doctor who devised Aiken was a surrogate for Mitt Romney in 2007, okay? And he also has had an association with your vice presidential candidate.
But I think
in the platform of the Republican Party, there is no exception for rape and incest.
But these are two different things. There are people who believe that there should be no exception. That's one thing. Then there's this issue. They do believe that a woman should have to carry the child. That's one thing. And then a separate thing is this pseudoscience question.
But forget the pseudoscience thing.
Their position
on that is the same, that a woman should be forced to carry the child to term no matter what.
That's what's similar.
How would they justify it may be different. But the position is the same for the party, the Republican nominees for president, vice president, Murdoch and Pence and Aiken.
To the Democrats, First Lady Michelle Obama came to Indianapolis this week to raise money for the president's reelection campaign in a private event. She came here from Milwaukee, where she took part in a pair of public events earlier in the day. It's worth noting that Wisconsin is a battleground state in this election, and Indiana is not. Mitt Romney holds a double-digit lead here, and Barack Obama has so far avoided Indiana in 2012 after making 48 campaign stops here in 2008. Indiana Obama Chairman Dr. Woodrow Meyer said he is still optimistic about the president's chances here.
You expect the president to come here?
I sure hope so. He gave me the thumbs up when we asked about it before. I know that the people in the campaign have a lot of hard decisions to make as to which states to go to and where to put the president's time. But having the First Lady here is not a bad sign. And if we do well today, and I expect that we will, that'll put us in good stead for a presidential visit later on.
Leslie Weidenbender, is that wishful thinking warranted?
You know that I don't like to make predictions, but I think it would be pretty hard to say that that's anything but wishful thinking at this point. I cannot imagine that this race, the presidential race, would close enough that we would start to see Barack Obama campaigning here.
So Michelle Obama comes to town. Joe Donnelly was busy. John Gregg was busy.
They weren't there. Their invitations for their events were sent out 2 months before. This was decided three days earlier.
When he comes to town, you can arrange your schedule, can't you?
Oh, even if you have fundraisers scheduled and
she doesn't.
I think they're very glad that they had those fundraisers scheduled. Because she's right. You know, if you've got your own function, you got to go to your own.
They had their own function. They were on the calendar for 2 months.
But I'm guessing that they're pretty glad that the First Lady's schedule came out much later.
Private event? No, not even a photo opportunity.
Wait a minute, private event in Lucas Oil Stadium?
Yeah, with hundreds of your friends.
But it cost you $100 to get in.
So the point is, you didn't get in.
No, the point is it's not a rally. You couldn't just decide to go. It was a fundraiser. It was a private fundraiser.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that theory. Sir,
does that surprise you that she made no outreach to the public while in Indiana?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, and I hope she comes back more, because the reality is she's taking money that could otherwise go to Joe Donnelly or to John Gregg. And, you know, we can all speculate why they weren't there, but they can't be too happy that she's in here chumming for dollars that could otherwise go to them.
When the reality is, states.
They need it worse than the Obama campaign does here in Indiana.
State lawmakers say Indiana's child abuse hotline is broken and they want it fixed. A legislative study committee met this week to discuss operations at the Department of Child Services. A statewide survey found that judges and law enforcement officials find the current child abuse and neglect reporting system inadequate. In September of 2010, the state switched to a centralized call center located in Indianapolis. Prior to that, each county handled its own calls. DCS says it's open to suggestions on how to improve the system.
That we have made some adjustments. We're running a pilot in a local community. We're seeing how it works, how it is working. We're still monitoring it.
John Ryan, the chief of staff at DCS there, Murray Clark, will improvements be made?
Oh, I suspect you have the legislature will look seriously at it. You have people from both sides of the aisle talking about it, and people with some experience and some maturity. You know, this administration, one thing Mitch Daniels did early on, first thing while he's looking at places to cut, he actually added resources to child protection. So in the short time he's got left, I think they'll look at it. But I think the legislature will look at it seriously.
Well, and they provided statistics there this week to show that things are better than they were years ago.
They're not better. They just clear the cases faster. They don't send investigators out. They just declare it over and closed. And, you know, no matter what the risk, this is a bad idea. It's ill-conceived from the beginning, and it obviously is going to have an impact on the ability of the local people. They no longer can just respond. They have to call DCS in Indianapolis, and somebody there has got to assess the situation in Vandenberg or Warwick County or Allen County and make a decision on that, and it's a bad idea.
And the concern is bipartisan. Right. Republican Senator Brent Steele is the one who conducted this survey.
Well, I think what it points out also, Jim, is that there is a distinction and a difference between privatizing, if you will, the Bureau of Motor Vehicles and bringing strict business principles to that and not to social and human services. You know, the folks in each individual county or community are more likely to have a better idea of what's going on, and I think that's why you have a bipartisan approach and respect for a good system that answers this before you have a really devastating incident.
So next year, Legislative Study Committee can't do anything. They can force the administration to make changes.
I'm not sure that the legislature can do that much either. This seems to me to be very administratively driven problem. I mean, I think that if there are problems there, if the legislature can ferret those out and maybe make some suggestions. But this is not something that a legislative committee can figure out how to fix. This has got to be done by the administration.
Finally, CNN's Money Magazine ranks Carmel as the best small city to live in the country. The magazine took into consideration education, job growth, activities, the housing market, and the overall quality of life. Compared to the other best communities that made the list, Carmel had half the crime rate, and the cost of a house was about $1,000 less. Mayor Jim Brainerd says the honor will help Carmel continue to grow as a community. Fishers also made the list, coming in at number 12. And Delaney, why don't you move to Carmel?
You want to get rid of me? I'd be farther away from you, Jim, and I don't think I could stand the separation anxiety. I think this is great for both communities. communities. It's obviously great for Central Indiana in general, and it's certainly great a tribute to both of those communities. I think it's wonderful.
And a feather in Jim Brainerd's cap.
Yep, and other Republican leaders in Hamilton County, Carmel, Fishers, Westfield, great Republican-led community, Noblesville.
You say you want to make this a partisan deal?
Why don't you move to Carmel?
Yeah. Well, I'm closer to it than you are, I will say that.
Partisanship and into the realm of music and say that Yes has decided that its hit song Roundabout is now going to be named Carmel.
Very nice. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Murray Clark, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Kitzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it, get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.